Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanners. So let's be friends. Today we're doing a pretty standard news ticker, but something has changed. I can sense it. I can feel it in the air. The news feed for Formula One is bubbling warm, more than tepid, but not quite hot. The statements coming out from the teams are less about reflection and more about preparing for the 2024 campaign. And I think the thing that has changed is that the teams are starting to have an idea where they think they are, and everything they're saying is now in context of that. Are we in the Ferrari have really got a great package this year part of the off-season yet? No, we're a little bit off that yet. But what is clear is that the generals have gathered in their masses just like witches at black masses. All above our pay grade, of course, but we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined by tech tire whisperer Matt Two Rumpets.
We don't need no stinking rookies.
Have you also matched me by doing a song lyric from a 90s rock anthem?
Apparently I have, yes.
Sick. Rock anthems are tight. Chris Stevens joins us from the Formula E podcast.
Hey, Spanners, your reference there, your Black Sabbath reference, that made me want to do the, what is this that stands before me?
No, so you've taken it from like rock to musicals. Now, can you see why what you've done is wrong?
No, that was not a musical. It was another Sabbath song.
Is it? Oh, fuck. How quickly my Black Sabbath knowledge was exposed bare. Thanks for that. So now, for my next guest, I have to go all the way over to Holland, which you would think would be inconvenient, but it's not. It's barely an inconvenience at all. Hello, Jules. How's it going, Jules?
Good evening, Spanners and everyone else. Doing really fine and looking forward to being back on the pod again.
Jules Sagers, of course. I nearly called you. You know, your surname just dipped out of my head for a second, and I nearly said, and here's Jules Holland, because you're, of course, from Holland, our token Dutch person. We found the only person in the whole of the Netherlands that doesn't sport Max Verstappen, but there is a Max Verstappen cap in your background.
There is. Why
is that, really, Jules?
I'm currently seated in my son's bedroom.
I see.
So
all the kids, all the young F1 fans in the Netherlands, is it like nearly ubiquitous? They're all Max Verstappen fans.
I think so. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, when Verstappen came up the ranks, this whole new generation of kids started watching Formula One because a Dutch man is winning. And you know how it is with kids. It appeals to them. So, yeah.
Yeah, so in the UK, though, obviously we're a bit more spoilt for choice with drivers. I think a lot of the young kids, Chris, including you and your fellow Gen Zs, are all kind of Lando Norris fans because he's the funky, cool, young British driver.
I know you called me a Gen Z because we were talking about it before the show. Yes. And how I don't identify with Gen Z very much. But anyway, I'm going to gloss over that because I am a sort of general Lando Norris fan. I think he's incredibly talented and is a, you know, bit more of a character off the track than a lot of other drivers. An English equivalent to Daniel Ricciardo, I think.
Yeah, I suppose a lot of the other guys were a bit more reserved. And I think so when Lando Norris came onto the scene, the Lewis Hamilton being funny had kind of gone away. So when he tried to sort of, he used to make jokes, he used to make outlandish statements. And then I think the press sort of wore him down a little bit and he became very, very PR focused. I think maybe you could look at when he went to Mercedes, you suddenly saw it was all about, I just want to say thank you to the factory. The crowd has been good. It was like this whole checklist. And they sort of, he became very neutered in the press. And then Lando Norris came in and he was just doing improv. Him and Daniel Ricciardo could have been on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, yeah, he's amazing. And you're right. Well, he's kind of rubbed off from Daniel, hasn't he, when they were teammates.
I forgot they were teammates, yeah.
Exactly. Mm. But I don't know. I don't think the fact that, you know, a nation is only interested in a sport when their country is doing well in it so much applies to the UK and F1, because I think the UK has got such a wide and diverse motorsport history and you know, current activities going on, that Formula One is always going to be big in the UK. I mean, it's always going to be bigger when Lewis Hamilton's going for the championship or he's involved in the fight with someone. And I think when Lando Norris eventually starts fighting for a title, that's going to change as well. But, you know, Jules is right, the biggest one we've seen of it was in the Netherlands when Max Verstappen started doing well, because suddenly there was the whole fanatic and they started going down there, they started arriving at, you know, at Spa and at Red Bull Ring to go and support him as well.
Well, this leads us onto one of the topics I was going to cover. I think the first thing the team I want to talk about is Visa Cash App today, so AlphaTauri. But there was a story from an individual called Graham Watson who was being quoted everywhere. Now, I saw it on Planet F1, but it was also in Autosport and several other publications. Not one publication mentioned that he no longer works as AlphaTauri's team manager. But the statements were coming out were quite divisive. They were quite toxic, to be honest. So it starts off fairly well with him saying very nice things about Max Verstappen, who's a driver in that same stable. And he made the comment, Jules, that Max Verstappen single-handedly saved Formula One. And I suppose in your part of the world, it might well feel like that.
I don't know if Formula One needed saving, but I think what he meant was that when you look at the further quotes that he put out there, he was actually drawing a comparison between when Max Verstappen went to Red Bull with when Michael Schumacher went from Benetton to Ferrari. Mm. And he claimed that when Schumacher made that move, Formula One became immensely popular in Germany, and then he referred to scenes at Hockenheim, while actually those scenes were already there when he was still driving at Benetton, because I think there's this famous picture of these German fans in short jeans yes. and wearing no shirts.
And mullets.
yeah, exactly. So it's probably not nice to say deluded, but I think he got a bit of the facts mixed up. So I'm not sure if Max saved F1, but I think need to agree with Watson when he said that Max Verstappen, he brought with him this whole new generation of Formula One fans and a different breed of Formula One fans, and you could argue if that breed is, you know, whether you like it or not, but I think he has a point there.
And undoubtedly he has done that. So I do wonder how much the effect of now you can't get a cheap ticket for any F1 race in Europe, how much of that is specifically down to Max Verstappen? Because they did always say, you know, Spa is a good one to go down to, Monza is a good one to go down to. There'll always be tickets, but the facilities aren't as good. Well, now it's a wave of orange and you can barely get in there. So I do wonder if that would have been, you know, different without Max Verstappen, because at the same time as that happened, we also got the flood of Americans and Drive to Survive viewers. And I think with all of these things, it's like, I don't care how you got into F1, which I think of as my own personal club. I literally, there's no gatekeeping as far as we're concerned. However you come in is fine. I think I'm less inclined to care if you're going to disappear when a particular driver goes. So all the Dutch revolution that came in with Max Verstappen, if Max Verstappen retires tomorrow and they're all still here, still loving F1, then like absolutely fair play, respect that, Jules. I do get the feeling that there's both with Verstappen and Hamilton, a big chunk of their fan base is that when they retire, they'll never watch another Formula One race.
Probably, very likely, especially as the Dutch over here in Holland, we don't have a massive autosport history. Like, for instance, the English, and we don't have a lot of drivers in F1. I think what Watson may have referred to or wanted to refer to is the online community that Max has brought into the sport. Like, Max is an online gamer. He has an audience there. He connects with this generation of youngsters. And I think he meant that type of fan, drawing them into the sport. Mm. And of course, those can be whatever supporters. They can support Lando, who is an online gamer as well, etc.
That's really true. Sorry, Matt. I know you've got a point burning there, but that is true in that the Lando Norrises and Verstappen particularly have brought people on who will watch them on their streams. When you look at the COVID times as well, people like Leclerc would also kind of jump on and joined in because it was happening. But drivers like Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton aren't sitting there on Twitch being that ultra accessible kind of personality. Sorry, Matt, go on.
No, in fact, they're not. But to me, it belies the very obvious point that you already brought up, that really, if we're going to talk about who, quote unquote, saved F1, that's going to be Drive to Survive.
Netflix, without doubt, without doubt.
Yeah, that's very simple. But he does, I think, a nice job of contrasting Hamilton and Verstappen. But the fact of the matter, from my point of view, is I think the sport is better off with the both of them in it. This is the point that seems to be missed, that he either didn't make the way he wanted to make or just completely got wrong. The sport needs a Max Verstappen and it needs a Lewis Hamilton to be interesting to people. And they each bring their own unique fan base to it. But I got to say, as an American, one of the things that this really brought out to me, and I'm going to contrast it to IndyCar, is that there is still a very nation-specific up and down in the audience for F1, especially in Europe. Like, if you come to IndyCar and you're from Mexico, you're from Brazil, if you're good, you'll wind up with American fans. Now, granted, it's not a global sport, but it still seems to me there's a lot of national specific pride supporting drivers in Formula One.
So our patron live chat is saying that in America, actually, Verstappen and Hamilton are both behind Perez when it comes to popularity. I'd love to see a poll on that, because I know Perez is massively, massively popular. But I think what Watson is sort of missing is yes, of course, there's a Verstappen effect, particularly in Europe. But Matt, as early as the very first Drive to Survive season, do you remember the first season when it came out in the winter and we saw the statistics on our end and we went, oh my goodness, there's people from America tuning in. So it was way before all the 2021 type controversy. When was the first Drive to Survive? 2018, I think. And so like 2019, we were suddenly like, oh wow, America are going to be interested. So it's interesting to kind of to note that, yeah, they might not have got behind Logan Sargeant, but they look to have got behind yet. Well, actually, we're going to talk about rookies a bit later on. So however you come into F1, I don't mind, as long as you commit to being into F1 for life, regardless of who's driving. I think that's fair, Chris.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'd say, well, Fernando Alonso isn't on the Twitch and the gamings or anything. He is a TikTok sensation, so we can check him in that box.
He does seem very game on the Aston Martin TikTok, yes.
Absolutely. But the difference between Max and Lewis that Watson kind of also addresses as well is that when Max is not at a Grand Prix, he's on iRacing or he's, you know, karting. He's doing something motorsport related. He's out there testing GT3 cars in the winter as well, setting up his own GT3 race team. And I can totally see him in the not too distant future tackling Le Mans and Daytona and all these other, you know, big sports car racing events, or maybe even like the Indy 500 or something like that. Whereas Lewis's, you know, off track activities all concern very different things. It's music, it's clothing and working on his brand. And in fact, that's the word that Watson uses.
Yeah.
Lewis, a brand. And I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that at all. In fact, I think it's great that Lewis Hamilton uses his platform and his following to do certain things and also to try and make the world a better place with his various different programs that he runs and raises awareness for.
No, it's only okay when Vettel does it with bees. Shut up. But this is where Watson lost me, Matt, because, and I'm glad he's not with AlphaTauri anymore, because when all these statements came out, I went, wow, an active AlphaTauri member is saying all this stuff. Like, say that your guy's brilliant, because he is. Say that he's a motorsport nerd. That's the correct description of Max Verstappen, as Chris has detailed. And yeah, seeing him, his dedication to the sim, his dedication to the whole arc of motorsport and being supportive and validating sim racing, which I think is a genuine, real skill set and sport, has all been absolutely fantastic. Where he lost me, Matt, is when he then turned around and says, is Lewis Hamilton an F1 driver? Like, what a ridiculous statement that was. Is he an F1 driver? Verstappen's an F1 driver. Lewis Hamilton's just a brand. And that's where he lost me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I see your point. And especially as someone who's a Hamilton supporter, it is irksome to see him relegated that way. But the fact of the matter is, if Max goes on to win another two championships, he's going to be a brand too. Like, this is, they're in different places in their career arc. And I'm kind of on Chris's side here. I didn't really see that as an insult so much as him just contrasting what the two drivers are currently bringing,
Matt,
to the sport.
I'd be with you if it wasn't for the, is Hamilton an F1 driver? That's, to me, that's what made it a little vitriolic and weird. Because, like, he's obviously an F1 driver. That's so dumb.
Petition for the first thing to come up when you Google Lewis Hamilton to be video game actor who made a cameo appearance in that Call of Duty game.
Yeah, Fortnite.
By the way, he won 7 F1 world titles as well.
Mm. I honestly love all this chat around fandom, because there's such a variation in what people are here for and who people support. And I think, like, if you see a change at all at the top, so like Verstappen's dominating now, we could very, very well get into a situation where it's a competitive season next season. I know people have written it off. I think it's wrong to write it off. But like, you watch those bubbling fan bases, because if Ferrari even have a sniff of race wins, the Sainz and Leclerc fan bases are at each other's throats. And that's great, because I'm not involved in that one. So obviously, as a Hamilton fan, I'm right in the middle of all the, oh yeah, with Verstappen versus Hamilton. But with the Leclerc-Sainz battle, I can just sit there eating popcorn and enjoy it. But that does, all of that, we should talk about Visa Cash App F1 team more seriously. So obviously, the news of their team name came on the back of McLaren, who have announced that they're calling themselves Cisco Arrows Dell McLaren F1 DP World OKX FX Pro Mil Google BAR Racing F1 team for the 2024 season. So that does make Visa Cash App quite sensible by comparison, Matt.
Well, this sent me into a tailspin, because it encapsulates, I mean, while both what's absolutely necessary for teams and what's absolutely tragic. So I actually went and looked up some old names from the past that I thought were better. Would you like to hear a few of them?
I would love to hear them.
Arrows.
Brabham.
Arrows is a great name for a Formula One team.
But that wasn't a sponsor name, was it?
No. I'm not saying they were good teams racing. I'm just saying the names are good.
Wow, hang on. Arrows must have been a cup. Chris, you're the history person. What was Arrows? Was that a company?
I don't actually know much about Arrows.
So Arrows was that all I know about Arrows was that Damon Hill won the championship, got dumped by Williams, went to Arrows and nearly won the Hungarian Grand Prix.
What I will tell you is that Benetton is a clothing brand.
Yep. But I mean, we had Tyrrell, we had Wolf, we had Spiker, we had Martini, Ligier. Yeah. Oh, so many. BAR, De Tomaso, Eagle, Dan Gurney. Gotta love that. Well, they could have an Eagle, but instead they got Visa Cash App, insert name here, .com, RB.
So hang on a minute. So why are we getting so upset about Visa Cash App and Stake F1 when we very clearly had all these brand names in F1 as team names before?
The thing is, right, what are we actually going to call it? Because
Visa Cash App.
First of all, is not actually like the name. Yeah, it hasn't been announced.
Yeah.
It was somebody changed an Instagram handle and suddenly it's a talking point. And it hasn't actually been announced. And as far as I'm aware, the deal hasn't even been signed yet. So somebody's jumped the gun on that front. Mm-hmm. But it is like the steak thing. I'm not going to call them steak. I'm going to call them Sauber at some point just for convenience, especially if they're going to have to change the team name at four or five Grand Prix during the year because of gambling connections, right? So but Visa Cash App, I can't get on board with that. They're just going to be, if it does have the Racing Bulls thing at the end of it or whatever, call it now, it's going to be that. Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, title sponsors are not team names.
There we go. Although I have a theory. Tell me what you think of this, Chris. I think as the world has gotten quote unquote smaller and corporations try to get more and more people to buy their thing, there's been a move towards having names that are completely meaningless in any way, shape or form so that no one can be offended by them. So that when teams do adopt them, there's no substance behind it. Like Martini, I know what that's about. Minardi, Shadow, Wolf, you know, like that's a name that has a point of view. These names are all calculated to offend as few people as possible. Therefore, they become almost meaningless when you're talking about a team of people with a real goal in mind.
Look, the teams will tell you what they want to be known as. Stake F1 have said our team name is Stake F1. That is the team. They're Stake F1.
Except in Qatar and in Belgium and in, the team's home country of Switzerland.
Except anyway. Where your own name is illegal and you knew it would be in advance. Amazing. Just amazing. So
I've sat here and I've said, I'm not going to call these things these sponsor names. But, you know me, I'm a big fan of sports car racing and I think of Richard Mille Racing in LMP2. I think of CrowdStrike Racing in LMP2. As well, and suddenly think, actually, you know, it does happen quite a fair bit.
Would you like to know where some of today's current team names have been in the past, Chris?
Go on.
Well, since we're talking about them most recently, shall we start with the current, but soon no longer to be Alfa Romeo? Before that, they were Sauber. Before that, they were BMW Sauber. And then before that, they were Sauber again.
Weren't they Red Bull Sauber at some point as well?
I didn't have that on my list of things that I looked up on the internet. No, but perhaps.
Sponsors.
Let's go on to something a little bit less arbitrary. Because at the end of the day, I mean, Mercedes is just advertising its Mercedes cars, isn't it? Mercedes Petronas and their oil. You know, Ferrari's there to sell Ferraris.
Yeah, but that's like an actual automotive brand.
Red Bull, a thing with substance
to it.
Red Bull.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, a thing comes in a can. I know what it is.
Visa Cash App.
It has a point of view. I'm a bull and I'm red.
Yeah. Well, Visa Cash App. It's an easy way to transfer your money conveniently and safely. Use the offer code MIST Visa Cash App Racing Bulls for more. Okay, that's not real. It's not real. No one try and Google that. Let's go on to something a bit more serious, which is AlphaTauri's boss, Peter Bowyer. I don't know his position, but he seems to speak with some authority around that. Is saying that the Faenza outfit can no longer focus on preparing rookies as it relaunches under a new name in 2024. So Sainz says, and honestly, in the meantime, Franz always said in Young drivers need 3 years to be sort of ready for F1. I hate that. That's something Matt, one person agrees with you. Stop dancing. Jeez. All right. Jules, AlphaTauri is the school of Red Bull future drivers. Why are they even resisting it? It's obviously that's the main reason they were there in the first place.
I took it as the new investors. So presumably Visa, Cash App, they want results. They don't want to pump money into a team that's not allowed to develop in such a way that it could fight for points that would then be taken from Red Bull's performances. So I understood it as the new investors demanding they try to be the best team they can be instead of trying to be a kindergarten for anyone Helmut Marko wants to see in a Formula One car for a while.
So this is really part of a larger story that goes back to the death of Dietrich Mateschitz, in my opinion, when ownership became more corporate and a decision had to be made because they had been running AlphaTauri literally as the finishing school for their favored junior drivers or someone else they could pick out of somebody else's academy. And that was fine. But now AlphaTauri, soon to be whatever it's going to be, but we think Visa Cash App is going to have to leave the bedroom, go to college, and learn how to live on its own a little bit more. And I think this is just the tail end of this plan that was put into place to make them more profitable.
Yeah, but then they shouldn't have a connection to Red Bull then, should they? If when the two teams were there and one served a purpose to the other, you could kind of justify the fact that Red Bull owned both teams. They're saying, look, we've got so many young drivers in the junior formula, and instead of, you know, we can't just plonk them straight into a world championship winning team. We need that finishing school, as you mentioned. And, you know, they've had Sebastian Vettel, Daniel Ricciardo, Max Verstappen come up through that rank. It clearly works, right? And it's great because it allows, you know, those junior drivers to get up into the into Formula One. It gives them a few years of experience before going to fight for world championships. But then, and I know this is another topic we have, but they're kind of intrinsically linked as well. The fact that other teams are now starting to question the relationship between the two Red Bull teams and how it can be used to benefit the main team. That then becomes a problem if one is being pushed more corporately now, and they're saying, look, this is not a junior team anymore. This is a team standing on its own 2 feet. And the thing is, they have been competitive in the past in terms of the midfield, but you can't have the B team beating the A team. It will never happen.
So we talk kind of coyly about this relationship between the two teams, and I always find that a little bit disingenuous. So I don't think you can argue in good faith that there's a close relationship between AlphaTauri and Red Bull. It's the same team. It's completely one organisation. I'm not having it, Chris. I'm absolutely not having that there's any discernible delineation between AlphaTauri and Red Bull. If Red Bull says jump, AlphaTauri says how high. They are the same organisation. One team owns 4 cars on the grid.
Yes, that is a fact. And a Grand Prix. And about a third of the grid as well. But the kind of key difference, it's not like you are in your Red Bull uniform one weekend and then in your AlphaTauri uniform the next. The AlphaTauri team does, in a sense, operate in its own right, whether that is with information provided with, you know, from the other team as well, and whether they swap information back and forth as well. Because I'm sure that somebody at AlphaTauri in the aero department has gone, oh, we should do this. And then maybe that's been passed up the chain of command as well, and, you know, potentially gone to the various different sides of the organization as well. But, you know, in a sense that, yes, they take Red Bull parts, the suspension, the gearbox, the crash structure, etc., which are the parts that you can get off other teams. Because Haas do it with, you know, Ferrari and Williams and Aston Martin take Mercedes gearboxes as well. But the rest of it has to be, you know, independent with their own, IP?
Intellectual property.
Intellectual property. Yeah. That's what I'm on about, yeah. So in that sense, they are an independent team.
I'm a bit more skeptical than Chris, I'm afraid.
I was trying to put it lightly.
Yeah. But listen, the team, AlphaTauri or whatever it's going to be called, are moving operations from their original base that was Minardi back in the days to Milton Keynes. They are going to be sharing a part of their factory. They are co-developing the Ford power unit that is going to be in both cars from 26 on. Red Bull and Toro Rosso, as it was called back then, the first years they ran identical designs of cars. It was like the Ligier in the Benetton Briatore days. They were just identical designs, and it was the case with Toro Rosso as well. So there have been signs all over the years where they are more than just, you know, coincidentally owned by the same people. In fact, before Red Bull turned to the Honda power unit, they had it run in the AlphaTauri for a whole season before that, just, you know, as a test mule for that power unit.
How dare you? That was a complete coincidence that Toro Rosso decided to try the Honda power unit and then Red Bull did as well. But I'm more on Jules' side of things, to be honest, Matt.
Well, and the crux of it is that the corporate ownership of both teams is the same. And this is, we had an interesting dance between Mercedes and McLaren over this topic. But for Zach Brown, this corporate ownership, the fact that the same company owns two different teams on the grid, is a huge problem. It's a giant red flag. There are too many ways for information to filter back and forth outside of the ever watchful eye of the FIA.
Okay, so there are some parts, and I'd like to ask you about them because it's been a long time since we've talked about listed parts in general. But when it comes to aero, there's obviously limited wind tunnel time that's very clearly mandated, and you get less if you did well. There's a bit of a success ballast. So Red Bull will get less this season, Mercedes a little bit less going all the way down the grid. And you go, okay, well, if their aero philosophies start to converge, then that's a bit of a red flag. So what happens is, okay, they can have the rear suspension, but what if we get to a point where AlphaTauri or Visa Cash App suddenly turn up and they've got a very similar aero concept to the team that they share wind tunnel time and wind tunnel facilities and factories with and share a lot of staff with? At what point, you know, does that become a problem? Because surely they're two completely different aero development plans with two completely different aero tunnel times. They should come up with a quite different, you know, concept, shouldn't they? At what point do you go, hang on a minute, are you two? Because you could go, right, Red Bull, you work on the front wing. Visa Cash App, you work on the rear wing. I'll meet you in the canteen, but we're only talking about golf.
Yeah, I think the concern here, because let's face it, there is and there continues to be and there will be convergence in this stable set of aerodynamic regulations. And we will see this from Ferrari, from Mercedes, from every other team that is looking at Red Bull and how they've been the most successful. So we've already seen a lot of aerodynamic parts copied, but they're pretty specific rules about the copying. And you more or less have to be able to prove that even if you saw it on another car, you drew it and tested it yourself. I think the concern that Brown has is that the AlphaTauri will essentially be used to go try more extreme parts with perhaps a lower probability of success, that Red Bull will then add once they see how they do in the real world to kind of circumvent the sort of testing restrictions that all the teams do have to live with. And his concern, again, goes to that corporate ownership of both teams. And in fact, I just want to bring up before we move on, we saw Aston get absolutely nailed for this, for stealing, copying illegally the brake ducts from the Mercedes when it was, were they the green Mercedes or the pink Mercedes? I can't remember which one it was, but you remember where I'm coming from. They will, if they see this, they might well prosecute it, but it's going to be after the fact.
So two comments here. One, Connor saying, isn't that how it usually goes? You get convergence towards the best team. Absolutely. So the fact that we're a couple of years in to a regulation set sort of ruins the point I'm making. But okay, you could say hypothetically then, let's get to 2026. If they were to then both come out with coincidentally very similar aero concepts in what is a new regulation set, you would kind of go, Now, Vites in the live chat, well, you'd better start getting proof and making more substantial case than I think they might do something shady. To be honest, I think the whole setup warrants some scrutiny. So I think it's perfectly fine to talk about what is possible in this unprecedented realm of a team out and out owning four cars. And when they were in different countries, I think, you know, maybe that's a slightly different thing. But when you just say, right, actually, that B team is now moving right next to us, sharing all our facilities, that does deserve some scrutiny. That absolutely warrants scrutiny. Scrutiny. I've said scrutiny too much. Scrutiny.
Well, there's going to be an AlphaTauri division in Bicester. They're not moving the whole team next door to Milton Keynes, right? But yeah, you're right in saying that the issue with just looking at the aero concepts is that, I mean, halfway through the first year of this reg set, suddenly Haas came out with the very curvy inward shaped side pods that Ferrari have been running since the start of the season. And the problem is that, especially when you're looking at like the back end of some cars, because they've got to shape over, you know, the same engine, for example,
sure,
they're going to end up with a similar aero philosophy on that front.
Yeah. Matt, address the Aston Martin comment that's in the chat as well, because what's the difference between what we're talking about and then Aston Martin just copying bits of Mercedes?
Well, it looked at in the Aston filter, this would be AlphaTauri showing up with basically an exact copy of a Red Bull and finishing third and fourth to their first and second in every race, let's say. And that's what Aston was trying to do with the Mercedes. But I think what Zach Brown is concerned about is more what happened with the Haas-Ferrari hookup before Haas joined the grid, which is a bunch of Ferrari engineers went to Haas, tested a whole bunch of parts in a wind tunnel, then immediately went back to Ferrari and used all that knowledge in making their new car. Mm. What they're concerned about is that AlphaTauri will be trying concepts that, if successful, will wind up on the Red Bull and essentially grant them extra testing time. And his point is, again, because they're owned by the same team, the current rules, which every team owned by a different company, may not be sufficient to prevent that leakage of information, that flow back and forth. And just to follow up with a footnote to Chris, it's the vehicle dynamics, I think, that are moving to Bicester.
So it is not unprecedented or a conspiracy theory to say that a big boy team has used the junior team to try things out, and then if successful, it goes on the senior team. I don't think that's a conspiracy theory. That has absolutely 100% happened. I've got my theory with Mercedes engines, but I'm trying not to get sued. Red Bull have absolutely done that with AlphaTauri in the past, but it's particularly an issue in this cost cap era at the moment. And I don't think it's ever a defense for something to say, well, yeah, what about when the other team did a bad thing? So if there's bad things happening, you can address the bad things or allow all the bad things. Jules.
And I couldn't even think of any other real motive for Red Bull to have that sister team, as it's not wearing its name anymore. It's not wearing the sister company clothing brand that nobody buys anymore. The name will not even be on the car or in the team name. So why else would you fund enable this team if it's not for your own gains? I can't see any other reason than just to have it as your test team, your mule.
Well, it's going to get down to, I believe, how seriously the FIA is going to take Brown's concerns. And you'll notice McLaren on the cusp of trying to make that step forward is by far being the most vocal about this. When James Allison talked about it, he was like, oh, well, but we have rules to prevent that. So I don't see how it could be a problem. I mean, it's just seems astonishingly naive to me, but then I'm a New Yorker. So, you know, I'm used to people trying to sell me bridges. I would be concerned about it. I would like to see some new rules promulgated from the FIA and or some better, more sufficient checks to satisfy the concerns that Brown has, because I think they're legitimate. It's always been easy enough to get a specific piece of information from one team to another team if you wanted to do it. But the same ownership just offers you so many more channels that are that much more difficult to scrutinize that I think it is a valid and rational concern.
Scrutiny. And by the way, it was Weitzer whose comment I mentioned earlier did say that it is worthy of scrutiny. I misread that slightly. But that, and I think it's fair to say that, you know, you can't make specific accusations without proof. And I don't mean to do that. But I think it's perfectly reasonable for Zach Brown to raise an eyebrow and go, okay, shared facility, same ownership. You've essentially got one corporate entity in one facility with double the wind tunnel time. So we can use the rule of charity and go, everyone there will be dead straight down the board. No one will say anything. No one will move teams mid-season. No gardening leave will be, foregone or whatever. And there'll be no loopholes to get around that. So we're acting on good faith, I think, because that feels like it would be impossible to police. All right, move on. We've spent a lot of time there with AlphaTauri, I think, Matt.
Yeah, we have. Do you want to talk more about the challenges of rookies, or do you want to move on to something else?
Do you know what? The only thing that lingers for me out of all of this is do they still have listed parts as the parts that you must make by yourself?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, do you have perfect recall of that list?
No, I don't, okay. But it's going to be pretty much everything that's not going to be a gearbox, suspension parts, and power unit, stuff like that. You can buy wiring looms. A lot of them are third-party, too, brake discs, stuff like that. But I think all of your aero parts, brake ducts, things like that, those you have to design entirely on your own, along with the chassis itself, of course.
Cool. Then that's that covered for me. I'm going to press a button. There'll be graphics and a music thing. It's very pro. It's all good, this. Toto Wolff has extended his own contract. I know this was earlier in the week, but I don't think we've had a chance to discuss this. This is extraordinary for me, Jules. And I know you're Dutch. I don't want to get you into any trouble, but you're a Lewis Hamilton fan as well.
I don't mind him. Yep.
You don't? I don't mind him. He's okay. He's quite cool. The quote that got me was, I'm staying at Mercedes to beat Red Bull with Lewis Hamilton. And whilst, as Lewis Hamilton fans, you go, hey, good. Well, there's some unfinished business. What is it like if you're George Russell hearing that?
I wouldn't be happy if I was George spending my winter my winter holiday and reading that. And you know how it goes in the F1 world. Nothing is said without any meaning, of course. So it's for me, one, it's clear that Wolf as Hamilton still feel that Abu Dhabi 21 is still something they need to settle. And they want to do together. And but your question is, what does it say about George? I think, first of all, it says that they still believe that Hamilton has got it, and that he's not, as some people think, oh, he's aging and he's losing his edge, etc. But for George, I was thinking, is this maybe because of George, maybe over? I don't know if this is an English thing, but if you overplay your hand, if you have,
I wondered that. No, I really did. I think this is a really, really key point, Jules, because, you know, you heard him on the radio and he definitely wasn't playing patient junior, was he? He was very forthright in his assertions. You know, what are we doing here? Was it in Suzuka? Are we fighting each other or are we playing a team game? So you have to wonder if the perception a lot of us got as fans, which was that perhaps he was damaging his status in the team with some of those team messages. You know, maybe we're not, you know, completely wrong, because it did feel very awkward at times.
Yeah, it felt like he was in the latter stages of the season, that he was more occupied profiling himself within that team, positioning himself and trying to guard his position rather than playing the team game. Mm. And I can imagine that's that doesn't go down well with someone like Toto, who, and as George knows too, Toto knows Hamilton put in so much effort, especially in 2022, in trying to make something out of that dog of a car. And so I think George may have mistaken how much credits and love, if I may say
kudos,
that.
standing, not love, standing. Yeah.
Within that team and with Toto, Lewis has.
So to me, this is interesting. And without denigrating George Russell in the slightest, I think if I were at Mercedes, my general take would be, not there yet. Not going to say he's not talented, not going to say he's not capable. But if you look at the timeline, if we're talking about having a minimum of 3 years just to know if the time and money you've invested in a rookie has been worth it, well, then becoming the driver who can win you world championship after world championship is going to be a longer period of time, especially when we consider adjusting to a new team. So I think, without meaning to, Toto spoke a little more truth and was slightly less diplomatic than if you gave him a do-over. He probably would have been a little more careful about how he said what he said. But I don't see it as an insult to Russell. I just see it as a reflection of the reality on the ground at Mercedes at this very second.
But everyone knows that I favor, you know, my daughter V over my son Oggy. But you don't just blurt it out over Sunday dinner. Yes, I'm going to be more invested in her education because she's more talented. But you know, you try and keep a lid on that.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Yeah, do you think he's just spoken a little bit out of turn, Chris? Because maybe internally they didn't quite put it as harshly as that. But externally, I think everyone's jaws dropped at that comment, haven't they? Because they're expecting Mercedes to do what they have done on paper, which is obviously Rosberg equal shout, Bottas equal shout on paper, at least at first. And everyone assumed Russell would get that same kind of equal status straight away.
Yeah, no, internally it's not been put forward to put across what people have said it puts across. It is just a sort of direct reaction to the 2021 season. And obviously George wasn't part of the team then. So that, to me, it says more about that season and the race that shall not be named, just so that we don't get a flurry of comments about
Abu Dhabi 2021, where Lewis Hamilton was absolutely disgustingly robbed through no fault of Max Verstappen's doing. And that is a scar that needs to be corrected. Come on, Lewis. But I'm neutral. Sorry, Chris, yeah. I interrupted you involuntarily. I have to do that every time you mention Abu Dhabi 2021.
Yeah, that one. It's just a direct reaction to that, because Toto and Lewis were the ones who feel they were robbed in that situation. Then they want to be the ones together.
Okay, but have they told George Russell this? That's the thing. Have they told him? Because last season, Jules is absolutely correct. Everything George Russell did, I genuinely think he would rather have finished fifth and sixth, but ahead of Lewis, than fourth and you know, finishing high up the grid wasn't as important as beating Hamilton. So if they want to, if that is Toto Wolff's stated aim to win a championship with Lewis Hamilton, then they do have to tell George Russell at some point that, no, it's not about you. No, you can't do the sneaky strategy to get ahead with track position but worse tyres, and then we're going to order Hamilton to not overtake you. So, you know, have they communicated that to George Russell? I genuinely don't know. But if you're Camp Russell, you've seen the whole day's worth of news cycle with this, I want to beat Red Bull with Lewis Hamilton quote, and that's got to hurt. So it's going to be really interesting to see George Russell's reaction out of the blocks. And actually, I'm surprised, like, no one's asked him it yet. Or is there going to be, you know, the launch questions? When's the first press conference where someone's going to say, does this mean you're a number two driver?
Oh, Valentine's Day. Because that's when Mercedes are launching the car. RIP to the guys who've got to work that one.
Yeah.
Sorry, darling. We know we shan't be going out tonight. I've got to launch an F1 car.
Why have they done that? You can't. Thing is, right, there's so much pressure on family calendars, and every family values those dates very differently. So for us, Mother's Day would get, for example, more than Valentine's Day. So if it was on Mother's Day, I'd be a bit more like, oh, really? Can I take the day off? Valentine's Day doesn't matter to me, but a lot of people will be getting in trouble for having to work Valentine's Day.
I'll tell you why. Because if you take 14, right, and you add the year of the number one mechanic's cousin's sister's neighbor to that, the age they were that they turned in 2014, you get hashtag 44.
Right. I was trying to follow that for a bit, and then I realized I should give up. Matt, James Allison also being extended. Now, the interesting thing for me here is, if you're going to go into the season and then you're handing a contract extension out, a 3-year contract extension out to your technical director, you must be fairly happy with what he's done over the winter.
Well, you'd be fairly happy. And you'd also be noting that the pair of them have extended through the first season of the new set of regulations, which might tell you something. But I do want to just point out, I don't think the internal rules between the drivers at Mercedes are going to change in the slightest. They will officially never call Russell a number two driver. But the facts on the ground have been what has determined that up until now. And nobody at Mercedes really thinks that's going to change this season. That said, I think it's even bigger because you had Toto Wolff in his interview, not just talking about this, which has grabbed everyone's attention, but he said the following. He said, we're even going to be looking at pit stops and stuff like that. I think they have finally come to grips with the fact that they have fallen behind in a lot of ways. The scales are finally falling from their eyes. They've had their come to you know what moment, and they are going to start turning the ship around.
Hang on a minute. Did he actually say even going to be looking at these things, implying that they never looked at that stuff at all?
No.
And that's what you would take from it, yeah.
No,
all
so
of there, our problems are down to the car. Every single one. There's not a single thing to improve in this team other than the car. That is a terrible, terrible attitude to have.
Did you miss the admission a few months back where they said, yeah, we know our pit stops are slow. We just prefer to have slower but more successful ones than put... And I went... What? That thing that's been holding you back from race strategy for years has been on purpose.
The thing is, that's an approach, right? Because, you know, let's say Red Bull go for the 1.9 second stop every time and it ends up being 2.2 90% of the time. And then 10% of the time they get a 6 second stop because something goes wrong. And you know, Mercedes will say, well, on average, our 3 second stop will be more successful over the course of a season. That's an approach to take, and it's kind of an endurance racing style of going about racing.
I bet if you added up all of Max Verstappen's pit stops, not Perez, they don't seem to care, but if you added up all of his pit stops and all of Hamilton's pit stops, they're going to win over the season, Red Bull.
Well, Max probably made fewer of them.
He's better at stopping in his marks, isn't he?
Because he's better at everything.
Yeah.
But no, for me, the key thing about this James Allison, it's not just a contract extension. It's a return to the Formula One team. Because even though he's technically been contracted with Mercedes, he's been off doing some INEOS project for the last couple of years.
boats.
Interestingly enough, he left aside the Formula One team. Mercedes went for zero pod. It was an absolute disaster. And I'm not saying that a Formula One team's technical department revolves around one person. Adrian Newey is not solely responsible for the success of Red Bull over many, many years. And James Allison is not solely responsible for Mercedes' successes. And him leaving is not solely responsible for them falling flat on their faces in the start of this ground effect era. But him coming back to the table in the middle of last year and then immediately saying, ditch zero side pod, let's do something else.
Is it
this now is... putting his full effort into the 24 car? I feel like this is a step in the right direction.
I think Toto Wolff walked into the wind tunnel and he said, are those what I think they are? He's like, yes, Toto, there's two of them. These are side pods. And he collapsed on his knees going, side pods, I've missed you. I never thought I would see you again. And he said, here's a contract. You fill in the bit that says how much money we give you. Let's go.
The reality is the side pods cost him 2/10 a lap when they added them
no,
to the car.
Incorrect. Yes. The lack
nope,
of side 100% pods is
that
all,
James Allison said that.
I will yell over you. The lack of side pods was everything. If they turn up with side pods, they're going to win. That's it.
He said it cost him 2/10 a lap. That's no, what James Allison from Mercedes
that's
said.
What
you're
he
welcome
wants
you
to
believe
think.
In your. You're, well, you're welcome to believe that
then
they needed the side pods to make other changes.
James
I
Allison,
that is true.
Is a genius, but a filthy liar because the secret to success is those side pods. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think if that was causing them to make compromises in a lot of other areas as well. No, Chris, what's Chris gesticulating about?
No, yeah, because Matt just said like they needed the side pods to make more improvements.
There you go.
Just,
so it was costing
they,
them.
They went as far as they possibly could with zero pod. It was never going to get any faster. So yes, while initially they slapped them on there and at first went 2/10 slower, in the grand scheme of things, they're going to be able to shave a second off of that car.
That's enough to win. They're going to win. So Chris Stevens says they're going to win.
Yeah, go on. Just put that on me.
It was really a bad ride height decision that mostly compromised them in terms of their vehicle design.
Yeah, no, go on. No, you say things about that because that I found that fascinating. But James Allison basically said they went conservative on the ride height. And I went, really? That feels a bit like, did they think they had that much in hand that they could do that?
Well, they didn't know. They were encouraged by the Brazil showing. So they felt they were worried about the bouncing. The thing that got them the most was the bouncing. And they essentially, and this is interesting because this is a problem where all the problems started fundamentally was they don't seem to be able to model as well the effect of ride height with these crown effect cars as other teams. And so to avoid a bouncing problem and put them in a positive window for setup, they went very conservative with their ride height, but then it turned out nobody else did and nobody else had that problem. So when they tried to go back down to that ride height, they fundamentally didn't have the correct car to ride it at its lowest ride height. And it's a thing they weren't going to be able to fix until this season. Plus some of the other problems from the zero pods. And you know how these things are all connected, the aero handshake, you know, do your summers, go ahead. You know, you want
to. Aero. No, so it sounds like they've got it all sorted. Good. Okay. I mean, I don't mind as long as everyone has fun. All right. We've got a couple more topics lined up for today and we have time for them. And we are yet to do a meet the panel with Jules Sagers as well. So we're going to get personal and find out about Jules's love of windmills and daffodils and clogs. But not now, not yet. So where do you want to go, Matt? So Aston Martin we want to talk about, but we got quite a lot of feedback from the McLaren kind of versus Mercedes debate. So we were talking about who might do better. I ran a poll on Twitter. Who do you think will be ahead by the summer, Mercedes or McLaren? And what was clear was, whilst most people think that Mercedes will be ahead of McLaren, McLaren fans really, really have their hopes up, like to a much bigger extent than I realised, to the extent that a lot of McLaren fans think that kind of P2 is in the bag. So I don't really want to rehash what we were talking about, you know, yesterday. But I was just surprised about the strength of feeling. I think the McLaren fan base has been like a paper tiger, a sleeping dragon, a hibernating bear. And now they've got a sniff of success. The claws are out in the Papaya fan base?
Well, I will be honest. Looking at what the two teams are saying, I understand why they feel that way. McLaren isn't making huge substantive changes to their entire concept. Mercedes is. So if you were going to ask me, I would say something like, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see McLaren ahead up to the summer break. But we all know how good Mercedes is at developing. If their fundamental concept is sound, they will catch up at an alarming rate of speed. So by the end of the season, maybe they're even. But if you got to pick one, yeah, no, McLaren right now looks to be in the catbird seat, we used to call it.
If you look at everything on the table, McLaren, for a lot of the second half of last season, had the second fastest car. If they can actually start a season well, which they have not done in the last 3 or 4 years or so, even last year, they had a Q1 dominating car and then ended the season with the second fastest car. So if they can just start on that kind of that ground that they ended last season with, then I don't see any reason why they wouldn't, you know, be the ones to challenge Red Bull initially in the early stages of the season. But of course, you know, Ferrari have done a lot of work on their car. Of course, Mercedes have done a lot of work on their car as well. So it is a little bit of a lottery, but yeah, the idea that they've got P2 in the Constructors' Championship sealed, yeah, that's a fanciful theory because we've got no clue what's going to happen over the course of the next 11 months. But I could totally see McLaren being the ones to challenge early on.
Yeah, I got to agree with you there, Chris. It of course, feels a bit rich claiming, we got second in the back. Of course, it's probably not going to be like that. But given recent history, and if you look at the present rather than, you know, the modern history, McLaren are the most likely to bring it to Red Bull. Mercedes have been, you know, struggling with their car for the past 2 years, and they couldn't like really make big steps with it. And if they made a big step, then two races later, it was a step back again. Well, if you look at what McLaren managed to do within the season last year, I mean, their car in the first couple of races, it was to put it polite, it was a turd of a car. And and I'm not pronouncing turd as most Dutch people when they try to say third.
Yes, it's not one third of a car. No,
no, I really mean like a turd, like
yeah,
this you're little.
You're saying it on purpose and repeatedly. Yeah,
exactly. So I mean, and even if Ferrari have a good car, we all know that when Ferrari have a good car, they still have an operational side that drops the ball rather sooner than later. So yeah, I can see it really happening for McLaren. Of course, it's rather ridiculous if you zoom out a little bit that we're having this discussion only because they presented a computer image of their supposed livery, and all of a sudden they're gonna be second this year.
Got it in the bag. So it's left to me, Chris, to be the voice of reason. But why don't you continue to be wrong for a little bit first, and then I'll come back and be correct.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I think it's hilarious that no one's involved Aston Martin in this conversation.
Oh, we can say, no, well, Aston Martin's our next talking point. So, yeah. I do think Aston Martin can come out of the blocks firing on all cylinders if they avoid maybe some of the pitfalls that troubled them mid-season. But I really do think that this is a strange comparison. Like, I'm genuinely surprised that people are talking about McLaren versus Mercedes in a way. So, yes, the Venn diagram between where they could end up does overlap. Okay, so if it's a disastrous season for Mercedes, which it was last season, it was a disastrous season where they finished P2 in the Constructors' Championship, and they had the highest non-Red Bull driver in the Drivers' Championship as well. That's a disaster for Mercedes. And that is, you know, an unprecedented doubling down of a failed concept for two seasons in a row. Yeah? McLaren punching out of their skin, doing amazingly well at their second stab, by the way, of the car at that regulation. They're at the top end of their Venn diagram. So those circles overlap a tiny bit. There's a very small area where Mercedes and McLaren might be competing. But if Mercedes do what Mercedes can do, they are clear of McLaren. Of course they are. They're aiming to beat Red Bull. McLaren are going, what's the thing that they've been saying, Chris? Ever been underestimated? Yeah, prepare to be surprised. Whatever it takes. That's their slogan. They're talking about all of that in the context of maybe finishing P2.
But, Spanners, yes. While I fundamentally agree to an extent with that premise, you're forgetting that McLaren didn't turn up in 2023 until Austria, until
Silverstone.
Okay, that's great. And why does that keep counting in their favour? That's a bad thing.
Because they didn't have that car, the proper, the car that they should have had for the whole season. They didn't have that until a third of the way through the season. If you're talking about the performance they had Austria onwards throughout an entire season, then we might be looking at a different story.
Well, I don't want to be the one to say that it's going to be one thing or the other, but I think if Mercedes get ahead of or stay even with McLaren at the start of the season, either one, they've completely nailed it in a way that almost never happens in Formula One when you make this big of a switch, or it's simply going to be down to Russell being a more consistent driver than Piastri.
I'm happy to reframe that as Norris versus Hamilton then. Completely happy. I'm happy to reframe the whole McLaren versus Mercedes as Norris versus Hamilton. Would you accept my terms?
Yeah, because it's about the car at that point.
Happy with that. I'm happy with that. And I'm surprised to hear you say that, because I think, what you're saying is Mercedes are, if they get everything right, they might match McLaren. Whereas I'm saying, if they get everything right, they're fighting Red Bull. It's amazing how, time will tell who's correct. I'm just amazed how different we are on that, which is great. It's great to be on a panel with two people, one being fundamentally correct and one being wildly wrong. Is great content.
I do enjoy it. It is true, but I am looking at the cars. I'm looking at where the cars are, and I'm looking at the changes the teams have to make. Mercedes is making a much bigger, huger change. If they're right about everything, they're still like 2.5 years behind in development trying to make up on Red Bull.
No, because McLaren is just
evolution.
As if they're equal teams. Like Mercedes is fundamentally a much better F1 team than McLaren.
But it's irrelevant when you're that far behind. That's what I'm trying to say.
Somebody explain this to me. I don't understand. I just don't understand the argument that Mercedes are 2.5 years behind.
Was Mercedes a better Formula One team than McLaren in the early 2010s?
Why are we going back 12 years?
I just don't understand why we're so certain the fact that Mercedes
is a better F1. Because things change very, very slowly. Okay, this is great. This is one of the major points I have when arguing with people. And one of the things that came up with Aston Martin's surge is that the team order moves very, very slowly in modern F1. So what we're talking about would be the greatest mid-season performance for McLaren to suddenly be out and out the second best team over a season. That would be incredible. And people are just talking about it super casually. Like, it's like, yeah, it's theirs to lose. I said I didn't want to rehash last week's argument, and here I am.
It's not theirs to lose.
That's what people are saying.
Yeah, I know, but yeah, McLaren fans are saying that. Of course they're going to say that.
That's my point.
Two people who actually know what they're talking about here. Sorry, that was a bit harsh.
Yeah, I know. That was gatekeeping. That was. Hello to all our McLaren fans.
How about that?
All right, Matt?
Well, I just want to finish up with saying the technical task for Mercedes is magnitudes larger than it is for McLaren, based on what Stella and Allison are saying, respectively, in the press. So if you want to go with who's most likely to have a competitive car with Red Bull at the beginning of the season, you'd have to say McLaren, based on what they're saying right now. Doesn't mean we'll see that at testing, as we all know. But based on the preliminaries, based on the quotes, McLaren are more or less saying we expect to continue kind of where we were and maybe make up a little ground depending upon what Red Bull did. Mercedes have said, we think we figured out our problem at last, and we think we have a solution to it, and we'll see when we put it on a track whether or not we're right. And so, I think it's reasonable to tip McLaren at the beginning of the season as being more competitive than Mercedes, who have a lot of catching up to do, even if they're completely right.
I love it. I love it when there's some disagreement in the ranks and playing, you know, pundit and playing you are the referee and whose fault is it and guessing where people are going to be is genuinely one of my favorite parts of Formula One. Can we take the logic that we have learned over seasons and apply that to future things? Will people put their money where their mouth is? Should me and Matt come up with some kind of interesting bet? If McLaren don't beat Mercedes next season, I'm the host of Tech Time forever. No, I need to think about that. No, I don't want it. I don't want to win. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I'd be cheering for McLaren in the end. Okay, great. Well, look, listen, guys, it's the winter off season. We do have a topic left, but I just want to divert slightly to say thank you so much to our patrons. We have had a bit of a first in our Patreon support. I would say we are fundamentally a Patreon supported podcast, patreon.com/missedapex. This is the first winter where our Patreon support hasn't gone down. So naturally over the winter, people tend to go, oh, there's no F1. I'll stop being a patron and maybe I'll start again in the new season. But we have increased very slightly our patron total that we get from our patrons over the winter, which hopefully is a testament to the fact that, you know, we're still providing some kind of reasonable content and we still have a reasonable community around us, even when there's no racing. So thank you so much to people who have stuck with us over winter. It makes a massive difference. And also thank you to the people who've used our tip jar. We always put a link to the tip jar in the show notes below. And we've had some incredibly generous donations over the winter. And all of those tip jar donations go to our war chest for advertising and promo. So all the other big podcasts get to do promo and advertising. So the Race Media, Stack with Matt and Tommy, all those guys have budgets that they can go out and promote. All we have to spend on advertising is what people put in our tip jar. And at the moment, I have an arsenal of 550 UK pounds, which will be my biggest advertising budget ever. And I know exactly where I'm going to put it. Shh, it's a secret. We have a secret weapon. But if you want to contribute to Missed Apex in any way, thank you so much. Please consider looking in the show notes for ways to do so. And because of you, we are able to kind of democratize the F1 podcast space a little bit and have it not all just be big corporations in the iTunes charts. Also, some exciting things. If you're into Formula E, we have a great podcast led by Christina Lee Mace and Chris Stevens, who have been doing a great job on the new Formula E podcast feed. I love the dynamic between you and Christina Lee Mace. The new show that came out on Friday was fantastic, Chris, and I'm really looking forward to the race review on Saturday, which might be the two of you again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the important thing with me and Christina is we actually get along, whereas you and I...
No, hatred. Pure filth. Yeah.
8 years. I mean...
If we spent more time together, I would have murdered you by now. But yeah, no, you and Christina just share a genuine passion for that sport as well. You're both young, up-and-coming people with great futures. It's a snappier show. I love the dynamic. So I hope that continues this season. And Jules, you are heavily involved with the Kyle Power-led MotoGP podcast as well, which is, you did 5 episodes, I think, last season. And you're going to do one next week, I think.
Yeah, we're looking to launch again for the coming season. I think next week, 1st February, so straight from ahead, with maybe even our first guest from the inside of the sport. Maybe.
Yes, of course. So
I'm not sure if I'm giving anything away that
no,
I shouldn't.
No, sure, but... fine. No, but and it's been great because you've been heavily involved in that as well. And it's been really great to see Kyle leading a project too. So super excited about those Missed Apex projects. And let's talk about Aston Martin. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. All right. Jules, Aston Martin, are they going to do it again? Are they going to rise to the top? Are they going to shake up the Formula One grid?
No.
Good. Okay. Would you care to elaborate?
Yeah, of course. I just felt like something about their really great start last season was just a bit off, and I wanted to feel like it was genuine and that it was there to last, but it didn't. And it somehow made me feel like they got something right, but they didn't have the either the stomach or the financials or whatever to really keep it up. And as sad as it was, because all of the Alonso fans and you know, Alonso being back in his what seemed his prime was really good for the sport as well.
It was,
but it was just a shame how it kind of faded away, and I can't see them doing that again with all the other top teams looking to fight for that second place as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hate to be boring on this topic, but the available evidence suggests, and this is notwithstanding the investment they've gotten, the available evidence suggests that Aston really, once their toys got taken away by the FIA, which we don't absolutely know for sure, but you know, circumstantially speaking, it was a pretty strong case. Once their toys got taken away, they were absolutely mid, just like Alpine. And this is in contrast to McLaren, which was on the other side of that directive and then proceeded to move up the field. So maybe Aston have figured it all out and they will be competitive. But I see that as much less likely than them showing up and being kind of like in their own little bubble as they were a lot of the end of last season. They were faster than the Alpines, but slower than the four teams ahead. And that's the most likely place for them to be this coming season. Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I can only agree with that. I know Fernando Alonso showed a little bit of promise for the team towards the end of last season, particularly in Brazil. And if either of them are going to be fighting for top end positions in 2024, it is going to be Fernando. Let's be real. So I think what we'll maybe see is another season of that team not quite being able to meet its potential in terms of its position in the Constructors Championship, similar to what we saw last year. So I'd be really interested to see where Fernando ends up in relation to the Red Bulls and the Ferraris and the McLarens and the Mercedes, because that's already a really competitive field. So if we're talking about, you know, the top five teams in Formula One, one of them's got to finish 9th and 10th in a race, right? And you know, at some point Alpine are going to nail it on a specific weekend and disrupt that order, or one of the other midfield teams. So it suddenly gets harder to measure that success of saying we're a front running team, but we finished 8th.
Last season just felt like it was sort of lightning in a bottle a little bit, didn't it? That perfect start to the season, other teams having dropped the ball fundamentally, Ferrari stopping developing after testing one to concentrate on the 2026 car. It just seems unlikely that they're going to sort of razzle dazzle, but they've set that expectation now, Matt. That is the problem. So there's a lot of like Fernando Alonso fans, and Fernando Alonso himself, I don't think will settle for they get to the Spanish Grand Prix and they've been, you know, dancing around the bottom end of the points for the start of the season. He's going to start kicking off. I can't see him going through another McLaren phase. He already did McLaren Honda. He's not going to stick at it again.
I would say McLaren Honda was an order of magnitude worse than anything he's ever going to get with Aston, just for a lot of very bad confluence of reasons we don't have to get into right now. But the curiosity is, as he finishes maybe at best 5th in every second or third race and 7th or 8th in most of the others, this is always the thing with Alonso. This is just like, how long is that fuse really before it goes off? And we know if Aston cannot deliver on their promises, sooner or later, he's going to start letting them know that. And that's, I mean, you know, we all wait for that moment with the popcorn, don't we?
Yeah, and I do want to give this one to Aston Martin. They have been recruiting personnel pretty aggressively in recent seasons already from the other top teams, mainly Red Bull. And then I think 2 weeks ago it was when they hired this supposed pit stop genius from Red Bull Racing as well, and now getting extra cash from outside the wallets of Stroll himself.
Yeah.
You know, that at least suggests that they are not, you know, thinking, ah, we tried last season and in the end it didn't work out, so whatever. They're still really, really trying to build something here. So that's a positive sign, at least, I think. Now, only another really, really great driver next to Alonso, and, you know, could really happen for him.
Well, the other interesting thing here is, do you think, with this new infusion of cash from Arctos, do we think that Stroll is maybe beginning to look for the exit on this project?
Quiet quitting. That was my first instinct when I heard about that, Matt. You go, all right, well, why is someone who has come in, taken complete control of it, been very dominating, you know, very authoritative with his big face. He's got such a big face. Can't get over how big and authoritative his face is. Just a huge... Hasn't he got a big face? Just the kind of face that leads people. But to then relinquish a little bit of that control makes you go, oh, okay, is this the beginning of the end? Because, yeah, Lance Stroll did not look in a good way. He didn't look like he had, you know, potential future world champion written all over him. Or would Mike Crack indeed say that the sale of some of Aston Martin, in fact, proves how committed Lawrence Stroll is to Aston Martin? Chris, you looked most cynically at me and you did kind of like a wry lip rise thing.
Yeah, I got the reference.
Ah, yes, from the joke I did. Okay, good. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if that is the first sign of going out, because I don't believe that if Lance Stroll leaves and quits F1, Lawrence Stroll might nominally be in charge for a little while, but he's not going to be on the edge of his seat week in, week out. He's not going to be at the bottom of podiums. You know, Jules, am I being unfair? I think he quiet quits once Lance is out.
Yeah, no, and I was just thinking, what would be a more kind way to Lance to end this? Is it for Big Papa Stroll to stay on as long to leave the team no choice but to say goodbye to Lance? And that would be really painful. Or would the nice scenario be, Lawrence quits the team, he sells it or whatever, and because of that, Lance follows him to the exit door. I think it would be less painful, the second scenario. So maybe this is the first step towards it, because obviously, of course, Lawrence knows he can't go on like this for another 5 years with his son in that seat, because doesn't make any sense.
What if the Stroll male gene makes your face get bigger over time? So Lance Stroll has a normal size head now, but they know that it won't fit into a race helmet as he adopts his father's big Titan Goliath face.
I think the news headline will be Lance Stroll leaves F1 for aero reasons.
That's the one. Chris Stevens.
They should put him on the hypercar program or Le Mans, because that's what Aston Martin has got in the works for 2025. That's his last year in F1 now. You know, on a season where he's unquestionably cost the team a position in the World Constructors Championship. So do another year of F1 with him. Hypercar project comes around, stick him in that, and he can very easily go and win Le Mans.
From Alonso's point of view, he now knows without a doubt, Matt, that he is much, much better than Lance Stroll. The potential that he showed against Verstappen is not against Vettel, sorry, is not a worry for him. I think here he can now go on a, like he did with Kimi Raikkonen. Once he knows he's got the upper hand, I think his PR is going to change a lot. I think it's going to be less, oh, I've been looking out for Lance. I saw that he lost his rear end. I was looking at the big screen and my heart was all a flutter. Please tell me that my little Lance is okay. That will change to highlighting here's my first prediction for 2024 then. You will see Fernando Alonso highlighting the difference in performance between him and Lance Stroll.
He can't help but do that because, you know, he's a better driver. What I would say about this whole quiet quitting thing, I think you're probably right. But Lawrence is a clever, clever, clever business person. And no one in their right mind is going to let go of this team until they get to 2026 and screw a Honda power unit into the back of it, because anything could happen when the regulations change.
That is a good
point.
So
this is like, he's greasing the wheels. He's laying his, you know, he's getting ready to head for the exits, but I don't think he's quite ready to get up out of that seat just yet, because 26 is pretty close and it's a real opportunity if they get it right and everybody else gets it wrong with the power unit.
Fernando will not be racing that 2026.
He's so old.
You don't think so? Oh, he totally will.
Quite confident in saying that. I think in 2025, we're very likely to lose both Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso. And there's an outside shot of Max Verstappen saying, oh, I'm kind of bored of winning all the F1 titles now. I want to go and do Le Mans or something like that. You know.
Really?
That's when there are so many big.
Where do these young people get these ideas from?
Okay, Spanner? You're absolutely right, Chris. So Fernando Alonso is 42 years old. Okay, I'm 43. I'm not saying that I'm as fit as Fernando Alonso, but I thought I had a really good fitness day the other day. I went swimming, did a workout, went for a jog with my son. I have spent a lot of today on the ground, like a fair bit of today just on the ground. Yet the body, there's a cumulative wear on the body. It just cannot go forever. So we're talking about Fernando Alonso still being competitive at 45. I can't see that or see any good reason why a 45-year-old would want to do that. You know, move on with your life. It's time to get the acrylics out, start your watercolors. Secondly, there's an interesting thing about Max Verstappen is, and it nearly came up when we were comparing him to Sebastian Vettel's career with Dan last week, which is I cannot see Verstappen going through a McLaren Honda phase, for example. You know, he's on this run now. He could win four titles. He could win five titles. If they come out of the regulation set and they're solidly, you know, a bit Ferrari-ish about things, I think Verstappen, and I would not object to that, might go, this isn't really the place for me. Do I want to hang around for that next regulation set to change? Lewis Hamilton had to wait between 2018 and 2014. I don't think Verstappen will spend 6 years of his life doing that. He's got other interests. He's got other things he wants to do.
2008 and 2000.
What did I say?
2018.
Oh, okay, 2008. Okay, everyone knows.
His first world title in 2018.
Yeah. So, I don't see Verstappen having that same kind of, oh yeah, I'll graft in the midfield again. Because to be fair, he already did that midfield graft and that rise up to the top. I think it's reasonable to then after 10 years go, yeah, no, the five titles, yeah. You know, that'll do. So yeah, you're right. In 2026, we could have a very different, who's going to win the 2026 championship then, Chris?
Oh, Lando Norris.
Not Antonelli. Oh.
No, he won't be. No.
No, not really.
Oh, you've put me on this. Do you know what? It entirely depends. It entirely depends if they're going to bother sticking him in a Williams for a year. If you don't know who Kimi Antonelli is, he's going to be a rookie in F2 this year. Probably one of the most hotly anticipated young drivers currently in the junior formula right now, Mercedes junior as well. And if he wins the F2 title this year, then Mercedes has got a problem because he's not allowed to stay in F2. So they'll either stick him on the sidelines in Mercedes for a year and then put him in the car in 26, or maybe they'll do a year with him in the Williams.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Well, I tell you what, we'll do that when we get more bored towards the off season. We'll predict the entire 2026 season, Chris. That's what we'll do.
We'll do that.
31 days to testing.
Yeah, it's nearly upon us, actually, which is why I want to make sure we get through all of our Meet the Panel segments. So, Jules Sagers, hello. The show is effectively over from a news point of view, but I love all of these people that are on the panel. And every week when we've done a Meet the Panel, I have got like excited. So when we started off with Catman and Chris with the now infamous bird story in Chris's house, the bird in Chris's house, like I was, Chris is one of the longest serving Mr. Apex people. So's Chris Catman Turner as well. And then when we had Alex on, I was, oh, brilliant. Every single week you go, oh no, these are actually my favorite people. Jules, you very much fall into the Chris Catman Turner category in that you're a grown up as well, a little older than me and a proper dad and everything.
Yeah, I am. Well, at least I try very hard to be proper dad. Yeah.
it's hard. You're in the same zone as me. So you've got little ones, same age as me, before teens, pre-teens.
11 and 13.
Yeah, 11 and... exactly the same as me. So yeah. There's upsides to that because they can poop by themselves at that age You can walk out of the door and they won't just die from lack of you giving them crisps. So you and I are in that same boat where we're just starting to get a little bit of independence back, but it's still enough that, you know, you struggle to commit to doing a huge amount of shows.
Yeah, surely. And well, not only because of that, but yeah, indeed. I mean, they are self-supportive in some ways, and in other ways they can do without me still. And secretly, I love that. So I'm cherishing those years that I have that from them.
Well, whenever they go like, "Dad, how I got this thing stuck in the blinds, please help me," or as I got the other day, "Dad, I did this thing to this roll of cling film, cellophane, I think you call it in the Americas, and it was the most warped, wrapped bit of cellophane you've ever seen, and it legitimately took us 20 minutes to unpick it and unroll it." I don't like to think about people when they're not doing Missed Apex things, but you have a proper life and a proper job. You're a full-up grown-up university lecturer in journalism.
So and to be precise, I think in England you'd call it uni. In Holland, we have a difference between universities, which is the scientific level, and then the
like a degree level. So I think what you're saying is that you're not like a professor for a PhD. So you're not providing a doctorate, but you are getting them at degree level. So you know, you're a university lecturer. So you're like forming young minds in journalism. And is that rewarding? Because generally, I find 18-year-olds to be awful.
Funnily enough, it mostly is. Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting age. We of students that we get, when they come in, they are sometimes 17, 18 years old. Really, really rarely they are still 16 even. And then when they leave, when they graduate and they are bachelors, they are these young adults, you know. So that phase of life, it's really interesting to be witnessing that and to be hopefully a small part of their, you know, coming of age.
And journalists sort of form world opinions. So my daughter's really, really hot on English, and I don't want to like plan her life out for her or anything, but I've said to her she should be a journalist and then prime minister. But like a lot of, you know, politicians come from that journalism world in the UK. I don't know if it's the same in the Netherlands, but these are really the people who shape opinion, shape conversation. And in a way, they're our kind of gang leaders when it comes to what we should all be thinking.
I think we used to be, and I notice now myself that I still speak in the we form as if I'm still a part of the journalism guild. But the generation that we see starting their uni life, they tend to be more influenced and be more opinionated by not journalists themselves, but people on YouTube, people on social media. So they are more
that's scary.
They meet and consume less and less quality journalism because the devices they're on.
True, but I think we're closer to our next ex-journalist prime minister than we are to our next ex-TikTok prime minister. So I still think, like, from a networking point of view, journalists are still in that kind of elite. So we've got a couple of questions here from our live patrons. Weitzer, who is our token Dutch patron. I know we have lots of Dutch patrons. So he's asking, we did talk about this pre-show, but he's asking, which driver do your children support?
Well, of course, Max Verstappen. And
how could you let that happen?
Yeah, it's. I want him to make, my son, I want to let him make his own decisions. He already supports the football team that I support. So, you know, I'll let him have this one.
But and that is? As I only know one Dutch team. Oh, no, I know two, Feyenoord and Ajax.
Yeah, and those are the wrong ones.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's I'm from the south of the Netherlands, and it's a region where you mostly see supporters of PSV Eindhoven. So
I see. So that's where you've got sucked into. So two more things I know about you. One is a horrible stereotype, and one is because I've asked you about it. But all Dutch people are into camping and caravanning and motorhoming. Are you a camper?
I'm not a camper. No. Sometimes I wish I was, but it hasn't grown on me ever. So not really a camper.
The Netherlands have taught the world how to camp and how to roam.
Is that so?
That's what I'm told. Oh, okay. But the other stereotype you definitely conform to is it is a nation of cyclists. And I was alarmed the first time I went to Amsterdam that cyclists are king. So, you know, cars have to come to a screeching halt, traffic lights specifically for bikes. But Matt, you'll have something in common here with Jules. You are also a hobbyist cyclist as well. So when Matt calls himself Matt PT55, you know what he's going on about.
Indeed. 55 teeth on the big old chain ring.
How into cycling are you, Jules?
I'm into cycling well enough to know what Matt is talking about right now, and that's a huge, huge chain ring to pedal on. So yeah,
he's longer than you though. So don't you have to have big long limbs to be able to do that?
It probably helps to have long legs to cycle with that chain ring. So, I'm not only a cyclist because I'm Dutch and it's our number one form of transport. Mm-hmm. I think, maybe cars, but who's counting? You can find me on a road bike, mountain bike. I really love that, just to go out and be, you know, escape the city. And we have a lot of
trails and places you can go cycling.
And the rural country, and it's just great to cycle there and be on your own for a bit, especially when you have a household with young kids. So I must say I'm big enough of a nerd to have an indoor cycling trainer.
Really? Yep. Matt, you can't approve of that. That sounds horrendous.
I only approve if they're rollers, because you can fall off rollers.
Hey, I can't acknowledge nor
or deny.
I can't confirm or deny this.
Yeah.
Next question.
I have to admit, I much prefer, I did go through a phase, an early midlife crisis of road cycling, and I much prefer going off-road just because you're not at the mercy of traffic. So I think me and Matt, if we go out and go, right, we're going to go to somewhere half an hour away, we're risking our lives on the roads, whereas in Holland, it's much more set up for that.
Yeah. And you know what I also do in my spare time? I don't know if anybody's still listening. I coach my son's football team.
Oh, soccer.
So that's, it's two evenings. And of course, a Saturday are the matches. And I get invested into that a lot more than I should probably.
So we've got a local playing field, like literally just outside the door here. And on a Sunday morning, you really hear the dads going for it. Like, oh, get in there. What are you doing, Derek? Ah, we've talked about this, you idiot. And you put your head out the window and it's 7-year-olds. And you go, whoa. Leave them alone. Are you like that, Jules? You shouty dad?
No. I'm pretty responsible, and as one of the three coaches of the team, I need to be a bit of a role model. So it's not like that. But the passion to win those games as if I was playing my own, it's bigger than I sometimes want to admit. Yeah.
Final question: have you ever been to Chris's house to? Rescue a bird from inside his airing cupboard.
If they had called me, I would have taken
straight across the channel. Excellent. Yeah. Jules Segers at Jules Segers F1 on Twitter, on X?
Without the F1.
Oh, without. So just at Jules Segers. Yep. The show notes always have links to all our panels. So thank you very much to Matt. Two Rumpets at MattPT55. Chris, who's at Chris on Racing. At Chris on Racing. Yeah, there you go. I like that handle. That's better than what you used to have, which was at Chris _ at Chris F1 _ I love life or something like that. But you've changed it now.
Stevens _.
And follow me, of course, at Spanners Ready, and the show at Missed Apex F1. Please consider supporting us at patreon.com/MissedApex. Don't worry, it's only 30 days till testing, and I'm sure all the winter silliness will abide. But for now, we are definitely talking after hours. It's off school. it's the night shift as we go into more off-season content. I hope you'll join us for it. Until then, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. Matt, no, I've got to interrupt. Because you shared with me personal information and now I want to tell everyone.
Okay, fine.
You just said one of your students' parents listens to Missed Apex Podcast and accused you of having a British accent, which is hilarious because I genuinely think we've ruined you. Like you even say, you say maths instead of math and everything.
I argued back that I use British words, but I do not have a British accent on this show.
I think you might still pretty American. Too much time because you can never tell. When you move to a town, you think, oh, I've kept my accent. Then you go back home and everybody like gives you grief. So I went home with my, I was his best man, my mate John. He was from somewhere in Scotland. It's all the same. And he went home and his dad was going mad at him. Why are you speaking English at me? Don't you talk English to me? And I could see him like be like, oh, no, sorry, Dad. Oh, no, let me get my claymore. And he got this big 6-foot sword out. And we spent time drinking whiskey and swinging a claymore sword about. And he was like forgiven. And I couldn't understand him by the end of the night. And then, you know, we head back down south and he talks all proper again.
Yeah, well, it is a problem when you hang out too much and you start to pick up on the local accent a bit. But I don't think I've lost my American accent just yet. No one's going to argue? Okay, fine.
I agree with Matt. Matt doesn't sound British at all.
Thank you. Sound more Dutch than British, right, Jules?
Very, very much
well,
so.
Even Jules doesn't sound really Dutch enough to me. Where's the stereotypes? Where's
the Dutch speaking English don't sound like a gold member from
Austin Powers. Yeah, it's really disappointing. No. Where's my schmoke and a sausage? Where's
that? Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.